Welcome to the first episode of Board Game Bros The Dusty Shelf, a Patreon exclusive series where every month I dust off an old game and see how it works. I am your host, Matthew Craig, and really quick, I wanted to say sort of the reason behind this podcast. So normally in our regular scheduled Board Game Bros episodes, we talk about modern games, usually games made after about 2006. But just because, you know, modern games are very unique and interesting and there's a lot of crazy ideas nowadays, doesn't mean that the old games don't have their own merit. And so this podcast series, the Patreon exclusive Board Game Bros Dusty Shelf, is for me to go back and explore some of the old classics. So today, for the first episode, of course, I am going into Uno. So Uno, designed originally in 1971 by Merle Robbins, who is a barber from Reading, Ohio. He based the card game off of Crazy Eights, and it's supposedly specifically based off a rules dispute he had with his son. At first, Merle Robbins produced and sold copies by himself, but in 1981, he sold the rights to Robert Tezak, who is a funeral home owner. And Robert Tezak founded International Games, a company made to publish and market Uno. And in 1992, International Games was incorporated into Mattel, who now publishes the game and owns the rights. So the rules for Uno are fairly straightforward. The main objective, though, is to get 500 points. Players gain points over a series of multiple rounds. Each round, players take turns playing a card from their hand or drawing a card if they have no available plays or don't want to play a card. In an Uno deck, there are four colors of cards, each with 1-0, two of each number 1 through 9, two of each of the action cards, which are reverse, skip, and draw 2. There are also four wilds and four wild draw 4s. A card can only be played if the top card of the discard pile, as in the previously played card, matches the card's color or symbol, whether that symbol is a number or action. Skips skip the next player's turn. Draw 2s force the next player to only draw 2 cards and otherwise skip their turn. And reverses reverse turn order, meaning that if play has been going clockwise, a reverse card will make it go counterclockwise. Wilds can be played on any card, and the player who does so chooses a color that the next card has to match. Wild draw 4s can only call a color that the player does not have in their hand, and then the next player must draw 4 cards for their turn and skip the rest of their turn. Players can challenge wild draw 4s if they think the person who played it has the new color in their hand. If the player who played the card did so illegally, they draw 6 cards. If the challenger was wrong, then the challenger draws 4 cards. If you can't play a card, you draw a card. Then you may play that one card if it can be played. You may draw a card anyways, even if you have a playable card in hand. When you play your second to last card, you yell, Uno. If you don't do so before the next player's turn, and someone catches you, you draw 2 cards. When dealing a hand, the dealer deals 7 cards to each player and flips the top card of the deck as the first discard. Players play in clockwise order, starting with the player to the left of the dealer. If the first revealed discard is an action, that action applies to the player on the dealer's left. A reverse means the player to the dealer's right goes first, and play continues counterclockwise. If a wild draw 4 is revealed, it gets shuffled back in and a new starting discard is revealed. When a player plays their final card in hand, they gain points based on the cards in the opponent's hands. A given number is worth an equal amount of points, so a 9 is worth 9 points, or a 2 is worth 2 points. Actions count for 20 points, and wilds give 50 points. So, throughout this, you can kind of see a few things. For one thing, the main objective of the game is to get points, and you don't want your opponents to get too many points from your hand. So, the general game plan is to try to go out, meaning try to play all the cards in your hand, while reducing the card value of your hand, so that in case somebody, you know, goes out before you, they don't get too many points. Usually this means playing the high-numbered cards earlier than the lower numbers to make sure that you'd have fewer points in hand just from those, and you offload special actions. Now, there is sort of a caveat to this that I'll get to in a second, but I do want to mention that if people play a lot of a given number, that number is less likely to appear later, because there's 8 of each number except 0, which has 4. So, when you think about it, if 4 people play an 8, then there's 4 more 8s in the deck, which means it's less likely that another player will have an 8. This is important because the main way to change color from one color to another is by playing the same number. And this also means that if you want to keep it in the same color, so like if it's red and you want to play a card so that it stays in red, or at least is likely to stay in red, you would want to play a number that there aren't many left of. The best one for these is 0, since it has only 4 other 0, or there's only 4 zeros, one of each color. So if you play a red 0 in that case, it's very unlikely that another player will have something other than another red card by the time it gets to you. Now, when I mention offloading actions, you should generally use them as often as possible. But if the player to your left or right is with the player with the most points, then you might want to try and save a skip or a draw 2 for them. Now, normally you just affect the next person in line no matter what, but say if you have a reverse and a draw 2, you might want to change the order you play those depending on whether the player to your left or right has the most points or has a lot of points. And even then, you might want to save the draw 2 over the skip just in case somebody else plays a reverse, but that's less important because they're still worth 20 points regardless. Now, wilds are worth 50 points, but they're some of the best cards to have as your last card because they can be played on anything. You know, so when you call Uno and you have one card in hand, you want to make sure you can play that card. And so generally, it's good to hold on to wilds, especially if you're the only player that has like 2 or 3 cards in hand, because then you're the only one that's the most likely to get to Uno and then play that card. So you're not running too much of a risk with holding on to the wild. And in a similar vein, if you have 3 cards in hand and 2 of them are the same color, that's when you might want to consider which color has been played the most, so you can try to play the second card of that color as your last card. If you have fewer cards in hand than opponents and think you can go out quickly, you might not want to play high numbers, because then it invites other players to play their matching high numbers, which gives you fewer points. So if you have a 9 and a 4 in hand, then you might want to play the 4 first, because if you play the 9, other players might play their 9s and you would get fewer points by the time you play your 4. But you might want to only do this if there hasn't been 4 or more of those numbers played. So if there have only been 2 9s played, then it's a pretty high chance that the opponents have 9s in their hands along with you. But if 4 9s have been played already, or even 5, then you might as well go ahead and play the 9 in your hand, because then it's more likely to stay as the same color on your turn. That's about it for the strategy. The thing about Uno is that the strategy is sort of, it's there, but it's not always effective, just because while, you know, you can think about things like counting cards or probabilities and stuff, it is still the case where if 2 people have 1 card in hand, then it's pretty hard to play around those. Or even if 1 person has 1 card in hand, then it might not always be the case that they're setting up for a win. It could just be that the color you switch to, thinking that you'll catch them, is the one they have in their hand. And the reason behind this is because, since the goal is to win by removing all the cards in your hand, or to lose with having only a few cards in hand worth very few points, every player is inclined naturally to just reduce the amount of cards in their hand. And you don't want to draw too many cards because that adds more cards in hand, which is more points for opponents. And so you want to play cards as soon as possible, which can mean that oftentimes the hands kind of play themselves. And even then, since it's so useful to lose at 1 card versus 2 cards in hand, then players will often end up at Uno without really having an out, per se, without having a strategy for how they're going to play that one card, or without having set up the play for that card previously. Which means that you'll often just end up with people going to Uno without without being able to play the card in their hand, and, you know, you gotta play the cards in your hand or else you'll give them points if they go out. Which isn't to say that the game has no strategy, but oftentimes the game can be played kind of automatically. And I'll get to some of that in a moment. But to keep going on the design, so one of the big, like, cultural long-lasting impacts of Uno is simply the word Uno, or specifically yelling out Uno. And I think part of this is because saying Uno is, like, incredibly cathartic. You know, like, you've been racing for this goal for the whole game. And when you say Uno, it's like, suddenly you go from a relative silence to this big commanding shout. And, you know, it feels super victorious when you do so. But also, the interesting thing about saying Uno is it draws other players' attention to them, which is pretty important for, like, a very baseline all-ages game. In multiplayer games, it can sometimes be hard for new players to assess who's a threat, and Uno streamlines it by having the threat declare themselves a threat whenever they become so. And while you can't really interact with players across from you on the table, everyone on the table still switches focus to the player who's going out. Which, you know, players who are second away from them might not play a skip card so that the player who's next to the player with one card in hand can try to do something about it. So it does help sort of a decision-making, target-setting, threat assessment level. It also helps prevent people from feeling like someone snuck a win out from under them. Because, you know, even though this isn't always the case, a lot of times it can feel bad when somebody suddenly wins and you didn't even realize it. Like, they just suddenly did it and you had no way to play around it or to prepare for it. You know, it's like they popped out of nowhere and won. And at least with saying Uno, everybody gets a turn to try and offload their highest card, because at least by saying so, you warn everybody, like, hey, I'm going to win soon. It keeps it from feeling like it's unfair, and kind of allows players to feel like they could have done something, which is often better than making them feel like they couldn't have done anything, because generally, in game design, you know, you want players to want to play the game again. And so, by making them feel like they had an option they could have done, it might increase the chances they want to give it another go. One small thing is that the game's core mechanics are about decluttering, which people who like organization or, you know, cleaning up might have some appreciation for the gameplay loop. This isn't, like, a universal truth or anything, but it is sort of an interesting point that, like, a lot of games are about amassing something, you know, getting this huge engine, or even at the time, you know, you have games like The Game of Life or Monopoly where you get all these riches and money and stuff. But with Uno, it's simply that you just remove cards, which is, I guess, pretty standard for that shedding hand sort of style. But it's a lasting, you know, it's a lasting feeling that a lot of games could cater to. Well, the game has choices you make. Like I said, there's few times where not playing a playable card is the correct move. So the game is kind of on rail strategy-wise. However, I don't know if this is necessarily an issue. When you think about Uno's sort of place in gaming as a whole, it's very, like, base level, like not even gateway, like a game like Carcassonne or Azul would be. You know, Uno is like the all ages pre-gateway game. But part of that is that, you know, you can win without having to think super hard. Even gateway games like Carcassonne or Azul, while they have some amount of like unpredictability, they still require careful choices and decision making. But with Uno, it's mostly, you know, consistently just play the card you can play in your hand, which means that, you know, players who aren't ready to make a huge strategic decision, or even a moderate one, can still play and win. This is sort of a design concept that appears a lot in video games as well, is that the ability for a new player to win tends to lend itself better to these party games or all-ages type affairs. And so is the case for Uno. One thing that is kind of weird, though, is the point system. By today's standards, the point system feels really outdated. It gives some risk-reward to holding on to wild cards and action cards, but many light card games nowadays don't really have anything that carries over through multiple hands. You know, that's sort of like a more traditional, like, euchre or bridge or, you know, spades type of concept. Nowadays, with card games, it's sort of implied that people will play the game as long as they want to, and if they want to stop, they'll stop. If they'll play multiple hands, they will. In practice for Uno, games can often overstay their welcome because of the point limit. If you have to play to a limit to determine an actual winner, then players often feel like they have to stick around even if every player is getting bored. This is because, like, if you just suddenly stop, and one person who has the highest amount of points is winning, then the players who are, like, second and third could feel cheated, because, you know, they could have caught up, but they weren't able to. At the same time, the point value for Uno can be modified, but whether or not that's enough to, you know, fix the game or not versus just ending the game early or, you know, not having anything that carries over between hands is another question. On the one hand, though, the point system not only does it make wilds interesting, but it does add a bit of depth to which cards in hand you play, which otherwise there would be no difference between an 8, a 3, a 7, and a 4. They would all just be cards with symbols on them. It's kind of a double-edged sword in that way. Something that's kind of interesting is Uno's rulebook lists possible optional rules, such as progressive, where if somebody plays a draw 2 on you, and you have a draw 2, then you can play yours and the next player draws 4 instead. But those are like a house rule, you know. But they're listed in the Uno rulebook, which I think is at least an interesting way to reflect on the game's history. If you think about, you know, a lot of classic games, they have house rules that aren't never part of the rulebook. Stuff like, a lot of people think in Monopoly, free parking gets you money that was paid in taxes or whatever. That's a pretty common example of a house rule that people use. But by including the house rule in the rulebook, it's kind of a recognition of the history and sort of a way of, you know, taking how players took the game as their own and acknowledging it. You know, it's like the game was so big and so history that people started adding their own rules, so why don't we just make that modification a possible thing in the game? Another thing is that by making this modification, you know, official, quote unquote, it encourages players to try and make their own modifications, not as like, you know, submit your rules to Uno or whatever thing, not as like a goal of getting it in the rulebook, but more so by inviting players to add rules and subtract rules, it kind of invites players to add their own rules and subtract their own rules, because, you know, if this one is optional, then what other parts of the game are optional? Or if this is a variant that you can play, what some other variants you can come up with? So it's sort of interesting how it encourages game design that way. With that being said, that's about all I have to say for Uno at the moment. I think it's interesting how there's even a DOS, as in a sequel to Uno, where you have two cards in hand as the sort of checkmate scenario. It's been so long since I've played DOS, but it's a lot lesser known, and the rules were kind of more complex than Uno. There's something nice about just play one card or draw one card that, you know, not many games can match just the simplicity of it, the basicness of it, how just straightforward it is. And I think that's part of why it's lasted so long. that and being pretty abstract and being able to be rethemed into everything, but you know. And with that, I will be putting Uno back on the shelf. Join me next month where I'll take something else off and blow some dust off of it. Thank you for listening, and thank you for subscribing to our Patreon. Check out our regularly scheduled episodes, and check out the Let's Make a Game series as well. See ya!